Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Okay, Robin, you know how I always fall in love with these women?
Yes.
I'm in love again.
Okay.
I'm so...
Do tell.
So excited. So, you know, often when I'm doing these and I'm reading these books and I'm taking notes, poor Brian, he just gets the download constantly.
Yes. Another one.
Yes. So this is kind of an unknown woman. I had never heard of Twyla Ludwig before.
Nor have I.
In my life.
And that's why I love doing this, Cheryl,
because
these women are all so unique, and I love hearing their stories. Thank you. Thank you for all the research you did to bring them to us.
Well, thank you for letting me do it.
No, it's a gift, and I feel like... The funnest thing is Thursday mornings, get up. Oh, I get to go in studio with Cheryl, and she's going to tell me a story.
I'm going to tell you a story. Now, the book about Twyla Ludwig is by Charles Ludwig, her son. And so he'll come up constantly because this is her son. But he wrote a book called Mama Was a Missionary. And it's the story really about his adventure with his mother. Mm. And so it doesn't go into a lot of background, just a little bit of background, because he kind of starts like when he came into her life. And he's her third child, her one and only son. And before that, she had two daughters, Fern and Rosalyn. But more about that. So Twyla was born in 1890 in Illinois. And of course, Charles doesn't tell us where in Illinois because that's not important to his story. Just Illinois is good enough to know. She received Jesus when she was 11. And from the time she was 11 onward, she had this kind of constant dialogue with the Lord. Mm. She loved to pray and she was always praying. And he called it praying a thing through. And she also had this other part where she liked to pray out loud. She just felt like she was more, what do you say, centered when she prayed out loud. And so she always prayed out loud, but she'd go into a private place or a private room and she would pray out loud a thing through. And this would happen numerous times during the day. Well, at the same year that she was saved, when she was 11, when she received the Lord, she went to a fair that was in Illinois, at like a state fair. And there she saw her first African boy. And she was absolutely enchanted. She followed him around. And something in her heart of this love for Africans just began to develop. And she got her hands on Robert Moffat's book, biography, and David Livingstone's biography.
Yep, we did episodes on Dr. Livingstone's wife and talked about her parents.
Right.
And they're establishing a mission in Africa and what an impact that had.
Exactly. And so these were her heroes, and she read them voraciously over and over again. And she prayed that the Lord would allow her someday to be a missionary in Africa. She didn't care where, but she wanted to be a missionary in Africa. Well, in 1908, she married John Ludwig, and he was a very good man. He had a large and successful farm in Bushnell, Illinois. But there was one thing with John. He was not a Christian. He could build, he could fix anything. He even invented like machines, but he was not a Christian. In fact, he was very resistant to the gospel, very resistant. And he said that growing up, he had seen too many hypocrites in church. And yet something interesting about John is when he was a little boy, his father had bought the biography of David Livingstone.
Really?
And he had read it voraciously. It was the first book he learned to read, and he used to stare at the pictures over and over again. And even though he wasn't a Christian, he started even then feeling like someday I'd really like to go to Africa. But he didn't tell this to Twyla, and she didn't tell him that she felt like she was called to be a missionary when they got married again in 1908. But she began almost immediately to pray for John's salvation, mm-hmm. as, mm-hmm. you know, she might. And one day she announced that as she was praying through, the Lord showed her that John was not only going to be saved, but he was going to become a pastor. What she omitted, because she felt like that would be hard enough for John to swallow, was the fact that she felt that someday they were going to go together to Africa as missionaries. Oh, she boy. Left that place out because he was already, you know, incredulous
<Hey, John. laughs>
over the fact that he would someday be a pastor, especially since he had this aversion to Christians and to church. Well, she kept praying and kept praying. And one day, as John was working on the farm, he saw Twyla go marching out of the kitchen and go deep into the forest that was bordering their farm. And he decided to follow her. He follows her into the forest and he sees her on her knees and she is interceding for him. Mm-hmm. And he listens and he felt like a little bit like he was eavesdropping on a private conversation between her and the Lord. But he was so touched, so moved
yeah.
by her fervency in prayer and the way she prayed for him. He just couldn't get over it. So that night he announced to Twyla that he was going into town. And so Twyla again started praying. And this is what she prayed. It's in the book. Dear Father, please send John to the revival meeting. And please have the Holy Spirit put him under deep conviction. Don't let him go over to Uncle Roy's or to Father Ludwig's or Father Ogle's. Make him go to the revival meeting. And she prayed out loud till she knew she had prayed through. Later that night, John returned, and she took one look at him, and his face was glowing. And Twyla knew in an instant that God had answered her prayer.
That's so great.
So that's the first wow. prayer answered. He gets saved.
Yeah.
But he's still, like, resistant to going into the ministry. The last thing he wants to do is be a pastor. He loves his farm. He loves building. He loves everything yeah. about farm life.
Well, those seeds were planted in the book, the autobiography or the biography of Dr. Mm-hmm. Livingston.
Yes.
And
yes,
the power of books. We see this over and over again.
Yes. So Twyla, right after he gets saved, becomes violently ill and is diagnosed with Bright's disease. So for those of you who don't know what Bright's disease, even as I didn't know what
yeah,
Bright's disease
know.
Was, and I had to look it up, it's a kidney disorder that oh. in the 1920s was fatal.
Well, yeah.
And so wow. they only gave her a short time to live because this disease had attacked her kidneys. And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, she became even more ill with double pneumonia, and she wasn't expected to live.
Oh, boy.
So you think about all those promises yeah. and everything God had given her. Well, John got on his knees, and he promised God that if he would heal Twyla, he would be and do whatever God wanted. He totally surrendered. Now, before he surrendered his life, but you know how we do, but we don't always surrender our will.
Mm.
And he surrendered his will completely to Jesus. And Twyla became well.
Woo-hoo!
But before she even became wow. well, she was praying this thing through. And one day she felt like the Holy Spirit put on her heart, "Do you believe in healing?" And she said, "Well, yes, I believe in healing." And she felt prompted to go through the Bible with a red crayon and mark all the places where someone was healed and where Jesus healed somebody. And she would go to those passages and she would pray over those passages out loud every day. Mm. And she really felt like the Lord said, "Stand on these promises." And she did. And again, she was made well.
Wow. And prayed it through. I love that.
Prayed it through. You're going to
wow. hear. Hear it again. I might.
The praying through again and again. But even as she prayed after her miraculous recovery, and even while she was praying for that healing, Africa became so strong in her heart. It resurfaced, and she knew that she wanted to go to Africa. In the meantime, John signed up for Bible college. And so they packed their three children, Fern, Rosalyn. Fern was 9, Rosalyn was 5, Charles was 1, into their car and headed to Anderson Bible Training School. Now, John was a little bit embarrassed about being there because he was 36 years old at the time. And he was so much older than the other students. And Twyla was 27. She was 9 years younger than he was. Mm. But he just felt so old, you know, now at this point in life to be training. When his relatives complained, now John was a little bit of a jokester. And the book is kind of filled with some of his rascally ways. And so this is just one example. To get the rest of his rascally ways, you have to read the book. But when his relatives began to complain that he was too zealous for the Lord and he was throwing away a great career, because he really was a successful farmer and made quite a bit of money, he dressed in rags, posed as a homeless drunk with a bottle of liquor in his hand, and laid down in a gutter and had someone take a picture of him. Then he went and he showered. He put on his best suit, put a Bible under his arm, and took another pose, you know, as if he was preaching. And he took those two pictures and he sent it to his relatives and said, "Which one would you rather?"
Oh, okay. A visual lesson.
A visual lesson.
Lesson, or whatever you call it.
Yes.
Wow.
So he silenced the relatives. They never mentioned it again. So their first church was a church in Ovid, Illinois. I don't know if you've ever heard of Ovid.
Nope.
But most people even then hadn't heard of Ovid. And it was a broken down little whiteboard church. And he set about fixing it. You know, everything that was leaking, everything that was broken down. He set about fixing it. And Twyla set about cleaning it up with their three children in tow. Well, this man in the community came in and said, "You know, this church is empty. No one comes to this church. You could do what you want, but nobody will ever come." Mm. Well, John started preaching, and you know what? People started coming. And within 1 year, they had over 100 people coming to this rural place to hear the gospel. And John was actually a dynamic communicator of the Word of God. And you think about his late start. And yet how God made up for that. And he became this really dynamic communicator. Well, after that, when the denomination saw that he was doing so well, and I'm never told, you're never told the denomination that they were with. But when he was doing really well, they sent him to Anderson, where he preached at a church there for a while, and then to Omaha, Nebraska, to open up a whole new work. So that's how trusted he was, even with the denomination. All the while that he's going from denomination, I mean, sorry, from church to church, Twyla is feeling the call to Africa so strongly. And she shares it with John, and he says, "You know, I'm willing," because he had told the Lord, whatever, wherever. So she starts sending letters to the missionary board of their denomination. And, you know, by this time, she's, you know, in her late 20s. John is in his, I think, early 40s.
So I don't recall when they married, like how old was she then? Because she really felt the call to Africa before they married.
Right. I think she was 18. See, the problem is he gives very few ages. So I was having to do math the whole time. You can even see my
math.
Yes. You can see my calculations in the back of the book where I'm figuring out when she was born and how old she was at each, you know, moment of her life of ministry. So I know at this time she's, you know, she starts the letter writing when she's in her late 20s. She goes into her 30s and she got quite a few rejections. And they said, "You're too old. You're too old." Can you imagine? You're too old. You're in your 30s, right?
Yeah.
And they already had 3 kids. And that was considered a detriment to going to someplace like Africa. You know, you've already got 3 kids. You know, John's been doing so well with the churches. Why don't you just be content?
Mm-hmm.
But she wasn't. And she kept writing and she kept writing and she kept writing. So John, because of her fervor, rascally John, right, he got a manila envelope and he put the address of the missionary of the missionary headquarters in one corner, and he brought it into the house, and she looked, and she was so excited, and they pulled out a piece of paper that said, ha ha. And she was like, oh, John, that's so like you. And, you know, her hopes had just been dashed again. But Twyla knew that the Lord had called her, so she decided she would keep writing, keep writing, keep writing until they said yes. And by 1927, Twyla and John, with Rosalind and Charles, were sailing to Africa. The acceptance had finally come, and they had been assigned to a place called Bunyore near Lake Victoria in the heart of Kenya. Mm-hmm. And they were assigned to go to a mission complex called Kima. But the missionary organization had a stipulation, and that was that they had to have enough money to support them for at least a year. They had to leave a bank account for their retirement. They had to pay their own passage to Africa, and they had to have enough money to pay their first year's support.
Wow.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
And so John decides, all right, Lord, if you're really in this, I'll sell the farm. But he said, I'm going to sell the farm, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to put it up for sale. And this is the amount, which was an extreme amount and way above what the farm was worth. But he thought, this is what I'm going to do. And one day this man just happens onto the farm and says, I'm really interested in buying your farm. Now, John hadn't listed it, advertised it, or anything. He hadn't even told anybody that he was going to sell it. And he's looking at this man, so he names his price. And the man says, that is such a steep price for a farm. And John said, well, I'm not settling for a penny less. And the man said, well, all right, I'll pay it. And he bought the farm for cash. Ooh. And John knew.
Just what they needed to get
it was
on that
the
boat.
Lord. Exactly. Exactly. One of the sacrifices they had to make was they had to leave their oldest daughter, Fern, who was now in her teens, in Illinois so she could finish her education. So she stayed with her grandparents. And that was a hard sacrifice.
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine?
No.
So, but they have Charles, their son, and he's as much a rascal as his father. And they have their daughter, Rosalind, who is just, from all accounts, just a sweetheart. So it was quite an adjustment for this American family just to even, you know, be in Kenya. Now, when they landed and when they went to this church, the main city near where their missionary compound was, it was probably about 20 miles or so away from where they would be, the complex that they would be at. It was called Kisumu. And in Kisumu, that was occupied by Hindus, Muslims, and, you know, the Kenyans. And so there was this mixture of all sorts of religions and superstitions.
Yeah. Sure.
And so, you know, this would be the place where they would shop. This is going to be, from now on, the place where they come to shop or to sell any of their wares. This is it. It's going to happen in Kisumu. And so right away, they set to getting to know some of the vendors. And Charles describes what it's like and how different it is, you know, in Africa. I mean, he talks about even the trip to Kisumu on the train and how the train is just these open carts and how they're warned about the lions. Like if they see lions, they're supposed to alert everybody because man-eating lions would just jump into those open carts on the train, choose a passenger for dinner, grab that passenger, jump off the train, and eat that passenger. So they were warned. And while they're on this train going to Kisumu, they see giraffes and they see wildebeests and they see zebras. They see all these animals that, you know, we don't have in America. And of course, Charles is in entranced mm-hmm. with everything. Okay. And Lila is just, Twyla is so excited about everything. Like, this is God. I am finally here. And it's interesting because she had taken a nursing course for a year when she was younger in obstetrics, just preparing for mm-hmm. the day that she would go to Africa. And she was very interested in hygiene. And yet she realized almost from the beginning that she was going to have to put some of those requirements behind her.
Bit of an uphill battle.
Exactly. Just to survive. In fact, when they got to Kismu, they went to this one kiosk that was run by a Muslim, and he had a shirt on that had like a really long shirt tail in the back. And he pulls out these sodas for them, and he spits on the bottle, then wipes it off with his shirt tail and hands it to them. And she's just like, you know, aghast. But she's like, okay, Lord, this is what life is going to be like in Africa. So they purchase a car. And it's incredible how many times John has to fix this car. And he does, because he's like this natural engineer who can build and fix anything. At one point, he had to fix it up with, I think it was safety pins, a needle and thread, and I can't remember what else, but Twyla, who will be known for her carpet bag. So she has this great big shopping bag bursting at the seams and sometimes weighing over 40 pounds. She had everything John needed to fix the car. Always. She had everything.
The Mary Poppins bag.
Yes, exactly. It definitely was. So they make their way to the mission complex, Kima. And while they're there, she immediately begins to see the plight of the Kenyan women. And in the next session, I want to talk a little bit about their plight, because it's, just the prejudices and the customs that she would have to confront mm-hmm. and deal with were incredible. But she sees many of these women, and they're scarred, and they're carrying these large burdens on their heads and shoulders, while the men are sitting around these huge pots of homemade beer with these long bamboo poles, just mm-hmm. drinking the beer while the women do the work. And she's looking at all this and how hard the life of the women is. And she's really, really, really disturbed. So the missionary station was set on 22 acres and established by a South African Christian lawyer named Mr. Baker. It was built on a rock-covered plateau and was 5,000 feet above sea level. And it was built to minister to the Abunyor tribe. I know I'm butchering these names. And on the mission grounds, there were all sorts of beautiful flowers, which Charles describes, including gladiolas and lots of fruit trees. The main house, which was not their house, was made from sun-dried bricks because there was not enough wood to fire up the kiln. There was another house that Charles would build later, but this is where they stayed in the beginning. There was a woman at the mission whose name was Mrs. Kramer, who invited them to stay with her. She was in the process of translating the Bible into the Olnyor language. And she and her husband had four daughters. Mrs. Kramer had been teaching some of the African girls how to sew by using pieces of fabric sent to them by the American churches. And the Olnyor girls loved to come and learn to sew. And at that point, Mrs. Kramer would teach them the Bible as they're sewing. And this was like the only reprieve that they had, the only good thing that was going on in these young girls' lives. So the Ludwigs were shown to another brick house with a grass roof after they had stayed with Mrs. Kramer, and it was really broken down. There were hornets' nests hanging from the ceiling. The floors were made from white clay mixed with manure and then polished to a shine. Twyla made sure that each member of her household was covered at night with the mosquito nettings to keep the mosquitoes and the malaria at bay. And she told them it was important not to lean close to the net, or the mosquitoes would be able to reach their proboscis through the netting and bite them anyway. So that's part one.
Okay, we have to come back.
Yes, of Twyla Ludwig. And oh my goodness, what a powerhouse she was. I can't wait to tell you the rest of the story.
I can't wait to hear it. Thank you, Cheryl.
You're welcome. It's going to be Twyla. So good. Ludwig.
Twyla Ludwig.
I think I called her Twyla Harris. Why did I do that? Twyla Ludwig.
No.
Hey, it must be a Thursday.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not-so-well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.